Go Strategic is pleased to present the School of Strategic Living. This is Lesson 22, entitled Hard Questions About Leadership by Dennis Peacock, Dick Bruner, and Dudley Hall.
Welcome to Strategic Life Training. This is Adam Peacock. I'm interviewing three men who I greatly respect and am privileged to have relationship with on the subject of hard questions about leadership. I don't know how grateful they are being asked some of these questions, but I really believe that what we're going to be talking about is going to be tremendously fruitful. Here being interviewed are Pastor Dick Bruner, a senior leader of Christ Church North Bay, president and founder of Sent International, which is a missions organization and ministry, and vice president of the Fellowship of Christian Leaders. Pastor Dudley Hall, president and founder of Successful Christian Living Ministries, an elder at Restoration Church in Euless, Texas, founder of the Fellowship of Connected Churches. He also serves as president of that network of churches. And finally, my father. For those of you who are in Strategic Life Training, I'm sure you know who he is, but in case some of those details are not familiar to you, he is the president and founder of Strategic Christian Services, president of the network of churches, the Fellowship of Christian Leaders. It's great to be together. I'm hoping we can just jump right into some of these questions about leadership. And I want to just invite you to respond as you have a response, and feel free to go in any direction with these that you would like to in terms of the interaction with one another. So the first question I would like to ask for us as aspiring leaders is, how should a leader rightly work to motivate or press for a response from people? How do you motivate or draw people to do things that are going to take you where that vision you have is?
This will be an interesting interview with this threesome here. I think the whole question of motivation really rests on a couple of primary questions. Number one, what's the nature of my relationship with that person? It's presumptuous, in my opinion, to try and motivate somebody beyond the level of relationship that you have with them, and whether or not they have voluntarily given you that place in their life. I think we get into trouble when we, I know I have in years bygone and all these ministry years. I feel like where I got in trouble was trying to motivate people who had not really given me that right in their life. But if somebody gives you that right, then it's fair, because we motivate one another. We provoke, as Paul said, provoke one another to love and good works. So that would be my first response, is it depends on the nature of the relationship and the voluntary nature of that relationship on their part.
And I think right along with that is once you have a relationship with someone, you can tell what fire is flickering inside of them. And true motivation comes when we encourage what's already there instead of trying to place something there that's not there. Mm-hmm. So to truly motivate someone is to discover who are they in the Spirit, or another way of saying that is, what is their destiny, what did God put them on this earth to do? And what is that flickering inside of their inner spirit? And for us to find a way to blow on it, to give oxygen to it, to give energy to it. And basically the two best ways are to remove obstacles that are keeping that flicker from bursting into a flame, and then to provide opportunities for them to do things that are consistent with that flickering. So I think we have to work along with discernment. We have to work along with the Spirit to really see what's happening there, because what we're trying to do is motivate the person for the glory of God and for their benefit, not to get them to do what particularly we want to do. If we're just trying to get them to do what we want to do, it's manipulation, not motivation.
Yeah, I'd really agree with what both of these men have said. Relationship was the first thing that came to my mind. And in the context of maybe thinking about, in the context of relationship and the, what we see in them and drawing it out, probably the only other thing I could say is that we need to look at the method by which we lead people, how we perceive our own leadership in people's lives, and how we carry that out through methodology. We know that truth never changes, but culture does. Situations do, and people do. Though we don't change our message, sometimes we have to change our methodology and the way we lead people. And some of the methods that are being used today are particularly in corporate organizations, that they've moved from a dictatorial type of method, you know, where they give all the orders from the top office down. They've learned that the most effective way to lead people is to draw them in counsel and make them feel they have ownership and responsibility within the company. And it seems that the most successful model today for leading people is building relationship in the context of trust and convincing and selling those people the truth, that you need them to go where you've got to go, and that they are critical, and their input and their lives are critical to the process of what God's called you to. You can't get there without them. One of the methods that the world is using, they've gone from that dictatorial thing to what they're calling now a flat organizational chart, where they somehow see the leader, not necessarily the corporate head as much as the facilitator of a lot of people. But the model that we've always believed in, and Dennis and I have taught over the years, is the model of the inverted triangle, where the leader really is at the bottom offering service and servanthood to those that he's called to lead. And the best way to get people to follow you and be able to fulfill what they need to fulfill to get where they need to go is to convince them that you really are there to serve them and helping them get to the place, and as a result, accomplish the task that's set before us. How we function, what method we employ, has to come out of relationship. It has to come out of a corporate in a sense of them feeling like their input and their action and their obedience makes a significant difference to the whole.
One of the things that I've heard Dennis teach through the years, and hopefully all of us believe, is that a person never is going to develop unless there is some proprietorship in the whole thing. And part of leadership responsibility, I think, is to cast a vision that allows every person under that vision or involved in that vision to have some ownership. And if they're only seen as tools or machinery to make your thing happen, you're really not leading them, you're using them.
Mm-hmm.
But we can somehow cast a vision that lets them have ownership, so that they can see that's as much a part of their vision as it is yours. And so it lets them come into the whole thing. Then it's going to develop them. Otherwise, no matter how good a salesman we are, we'll ultimately just use them and burn them up.
And that brings us back to the whole concept of sonship. It brings us back to where we need to cast a vision and draw from them a spirit of sonship, rather than them seeing themselves as somehow an employer or servant. I mean, Dennis has taught on this for years. And the key to effectively leading anybody is making them feel like they really are jointed and belong to part of the process. And if you're going to lead them as sons, you've found a good thing.
Well, one other thing that I would add to all this, which is all great, is the difference between a leader and a pointer. And if we really want to lead, we have to lead by going there ourselves first and demonstrating what it is we want them to be and what it is we want them to do. There's lots of pointers saying you need to go here, you need to go there. But the most effective leader, and that's obviously why Christ is the most effective leader, is he shows us by example where he wants us to go. I love the fact that God's never asked me to do anything that he hasn't already done himself. And I respect that kind of leadership. I think everybody does. And I think, well, I know all three of us and those of you that are listening aspire to be leaders, not pointers.
I think there's really a wealth to be heard in those answers. One thing that struck me was in talking about the methodology of leadership, and one of the pillars of this course of strategic life training is generational transfer and building generationally. And I think where one methodology might work for a generation or for a period of time, it could never, because of the way leadership has been approached, because of the way people have been used or not used, it will never go to the next generation. And if we desire to build generationally, then it definitely will require building on a rock, that model of building on the rock, on that edifice of Christ. That building, according to the rock model, might not go up quite as fast as that of the sand model or the sand methodology, but without it, it won't last.
Sure.
I'd like to shift to another aspect as we kind of tackle some more of these questions in regards to leadership. I know one of the responsibilities of leadership is having to deal with a lot of information of a sensitive nature, or being someone who people come to who want to tell you things or want you to fix things for them. As they were speaking earlier, talking about a situation where someone would come to you and say, I would like to share this with you in secrecy, and I need to get this off my chest, and I want to bring it to you, and then want to tell you something that could be surprising. I know as leaders, you come across all sorts of information that can be very delicate. I just wanted to ask you, in your experience, how do you handle sensitive information? What principles or what things have you learned that allow you to make a decision on how you're going to act or not act on delicate matters and information that you are made aware of?
And everybody's looking at everybody here. I'm sure I speak for all of us. to some degree I'm speaking foolishly, but there's a lot of things I wish I didn't know. The reason I was smiling a little as you're asking that question, you know, you think of all the things that people have said to you that you're saying, I want to help you, but I really wish I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time somebody confessed to me that they killed somebody, you know, with the dilemma of how do I handle that? Mm-hmm. And what do you do with all that kind of stuff? But, you know, my initial response, Adam, is when I'm about to hear that information, I really start praying the heart and the spirit because I want to be able to give that person as clear a definition as I can as to how I will hear that information. And when they say, this is confidential, I want you to tell me, what does that mean? Does that mean I can't tell Jan? Does that mean I can't tell Dick? Does that mean I can't tell Dudley? Because confidentiality has got to be defined. It's not just a blanket thing. And I think for me, just to kick it off, that's the most important question I have is, will you please define what it is you mean when we're talking about limiting where this information goes? You know, Dick and I, we've been together in Dudley, and we're going to die together, we hope, in some years, or let that be. But, I mean, I hear things. I'm not going to try and carry them by myself. And I have to have the freedom to be able to, I mean, if you're going to confess something or share something with me that's very personal, if it's just personal, that's one thing. But if it has implications that affect the whole, I'm not going to try and carry that by myself, and I would have to share that with you. Well, look, I'm walking with Dudley and Dick, and I need you to know, and I trust these guys, that if you share something that's going to affect a greater sphere of people than just you, you've got to give me the liberty to share and get counsel, maybe even before I get back and respond to you. I may give you a delayed response and say, I do this a lot. Say, well, I can't talk to you now. I mean, I'll hear it, I'll pray about it, but don't expect an immediate response. I may need more counsel on this.
Let me jump off of that. Dennis and I have walked together many, many years. And I know that it's our commitment that we believe that God is a relational God and government flows out of relationship. And I have found myself in situations many times over the years where I've had people approach me who want to say something to me in confidence. And because of my own personal revelation that God has joined me to other men, and that it's out of our core variety as much as out of my life individually, we demonstrate and express government. I always have to say to that individual, I can commit myself to confidentiality. I will not commit myself to secrecy. Mm-hmm. Confidentiality means you will trust me with what you tell me. If you can't trust me with what you tell me, then you probably shouldn't tell me. Mm-hmm. But if you are going to trust me with what you're going to say, you need to be able to trust. I will keep it in confidence, but not in secrecy. If I need to share it for your good and for the good of the situation with appropriate relationships, I will do that. And if they can't respond to that, then I probably will ask them not to share with them.
Just going back to the original comment there and backing up just a little, I think anybody aspiring to be a leader needs to understand that the information you'll get at that level is quite a responsibility. As Dennis said, there's just lots of things you know now that you just wish you didn't know. And part of the burden of leadership is bearing things that there's nobody to share with. I mean, it's great to have a wife or some friends that you can walk with, but still, sometimes things are so heavy, it's heavier than three or four of you can bear. Yeah. And it takes the grace of God to just say, okay, that's my lot, that's my privilege and my responsibility, I'll do it. And the discernment from God to know timing in things is so very, very essential. So many people think just the acquisition of knowledge is what brings power, but it's how you use that knowledge and the timing of it. And like talking to prophets, for instance, you know, and the few prophetic words that I've gotten, it's not what you know, it's what you do with what you know. Who you say it to, when you say it. You know, the people that I respect and that walk in a high level of prophecy tell me their problem is not hearing God. Their problem is knowing what to do with it once they've heard. And whether you hear something in a dream or you hear something that comes from the mouth of others, to know what to do with sensitive information requires great responsibility. And I think one of the things that disqualifies a leader is one who does not know how to handle sensitive information.
Absolutely.
You can absolutely destroy whatever structure is there if it's not handled properly. So it's not a bad idea to learn to be quiet and learn to mull things over with God until it's found some level of peace in your own heart. You know, if you have to unload it because it's too heavy, it may say something about your level of maturity or ability to be a leader at that time.
But I remember the first time the Lord spoke to me very directly about this thing was in 74. And I was counseling with a young lady in the church, and I could see in the spirit who God wanted to give her as a spouse. All of the things being the free will of man and the sovereignty of God operating within the life of a believer. And as I saw it, I was immediately tempted to share it with her. And as that thought went through my mind, the Holy Spirit, you know, the Lord speaks to us in our own language. That's why he calls me dummy. And he, you know, he all but said, dummy, if you had any idea how many things I wanted to share with you, but I can't trust you because you talk about them. And because you talk about them, you complicate the process.
Yeah.
And I realized at that moment the burden and the responsibility of information, because information is power. And if he gives us power and then we misuse it, and we're not talking about, you know, telling who committed adultery. I mean, you know, that's all one negative thing. But we're not just talking about that. We're talking about complicating the processes of God in individuals' lives because we give them information in the wrong place, the wrong way, or that we're not supposed to give them at all, that we're supposed to just pray about and hold. And it really, you know, shocked me. I don't know how well I've done since these many years, but I've tried. I tried. One other last thing I have to say about this, and this would be advice to for those of you that are listening with an ear in terms of who can I trust. I pay attention to the things that people reveal to me. And if I'm around somebody who I think handles information in a looser than appropriate way, then that tells me, if I'm talking to them, you know, speak right into the microphone. And I, you know, you occasionally run into people who have information from a leadership point of view who share things that make me uncomfortable. And then that is going to make me reluctant. If I'm in a situation, do I share with them or do I not? The chances are I won't, because I've heard them share information that I didn't think was appropriate to be shared.
We talked in these first few questions about just discerning how to motivate people and learning to see how God set that whole relationship to work, and about handling sensitive information. These are two qualities as leaders we should aspire to develop into our lives. What are some other qualities regarding leadership, regarding building authority as Jesus, who talked as one with authority into our lives, that is young people we should be developing, investing, cultivating for whatever leadership God would bring us into?
Well, let me jump off here and sound like a preacher teacher for a second. But if we look into heaven and we see the ultimate leader, the ultimate throne of God, sitting on that throne is a lamb. And I think that's a clue as to what we should be aspiring to have character-wise, the qualities of the lamb. Because it is that character, those qualities, that God will put the weight of authority on. Of his government there should be no end. There is the increase of government where there is the qualities of humility, meekness, patience, submission to the will of God. You know, those are not just cute little things we learn in Sunday school that we talk about. That is the mortar and the brick that make up what God is going to put his power on. And so if we can get those out of religious concepts, religious terms, and get them down to like reality, what's humility? Well, it's obviously not walking around saying I'm nothing and whatever. Humility is recognizing reality. It's recognizing who God is and who you are and not mixing the two. It's keeping the boundaries. It's keeping the division, distinction there. Patience, it's not passivity. It's a conscious faith in God, believing that what he says he will do, and he'll do it in his time, and then cooperating with him in the whole thing. So I would think anybody who wants to be a leader could not go wrong focusing on the Lamb on the throne, the one who laid down his life for others, and he has those characteristics. You know, what caused Christ to go to the cross? It was those characteristics of a lamb. And, you know, ultimately, authority comes from aligning ourselves with eternal truth. I have no authority except as I mouth or carry out the authority that I've heard from the past. Jesus said that's where he got in. He said, I didn't start all this. whatever my father speaks, I speak. And when they ask him, well, where did John get his authority? Well, he told them this little story that, you know, kept them all with their mouths shut, like, where did John the Baptist get his? And of course, they were afraid to answer because they needed to catch him in a trap. But he really was answering, I think. He was answering the question. I get mine the same place John the Baptist got his. John the Baptist was getting his from the prophets, and he was in a long line of explainers of truth, and I'm getting mine from the same place. Jesus was saying, I'm in that long line of truth. We have to be in the flow of eternal truth, and the flow of eternal truth takes the form of character, not just words.
Amen. I don't know what all that one said. You know, one thing about the lamb, but Dudley, as you were sharing that, I think about, I love big dogs if they're good dogs. There's bad big dogs, and there's good big dogs.
And there's bad little dogs.
Yeah, it's true. I run into a lot of bad little dogs. But I love to watch. I think about like a Rottweiler or a big German Shepherd or something, or a big dog with a lot of power. And when you watch little kids play on them, they tug their ears, they just brutalize that dog. And you know what that dog, if that dog ever got excited, that kid would be big time hurt. And when I see that, I think about God. I think about the Lord having patience. We tug on his ears, we step on his tail, we hurt him all the time, and he puts up with it in a redemptive kind of way. It's not like he overlooks it. It's not like he doesn't know what's happening. It's not like he is going to try and change us. But when you think about the Lamb on the throne, that's kind of the picture I get, is the Lord, out of his love for us, putting up with. He knows our frame. He knows that we're but dust. And one of the things I really appreciate about a leader, or anyone who has the grace to be able to have that same kind of an attitude without being permissive. But nevertheless, you know, it's back to meekness. It's power under control. It's an appropriate understanding response of meeting somebody where they are and not whacking at them because they're not where they ought to be.
Yeah. I don't know if we get to this early, but I think it's so important that we don't become perfectionist or idealist as leaders, because, I mean, if we stop for a minute and look at ourselves, God is perfectly willing to operate with imperfection, and sometimes we aren't. If he weren't, he wouldn't get anything done on this earth. Because, I mean, everything
good health is hard to find.
That's right. And yet, I find that sometimes as leaders, we are so goal-oriented, success-oriented, whatever, that we want things to work right, the structure to be all right, everything to happen, that we, first of all, forget that we're imperfect, and second, we forget that everybody we're working with is imperfect. And God's willing to work with imperfection, and we aren't. And therefore, we run into a major problem. And sometimes to be able to, if we move the ball down the field at all, to be happy about it, and not get all uptight because we didn't score every time we touched the ball, to use that analogy.
And I want to mention something that maybe would come from a little bit different direction. I feel like we're talking about important issues of leadership and what qualifies a man for leadership. One of the things that sticks out of my mind in a very strong way is anyone who aspires to be a leader really needs to know what it means to have served a leader. Now, you got a lot of people out there that are listening to you, that are aspiring to believe that God's destiny is going to be fulfilled in their life. They've got a lot of different concepts. If you ask any one of them to define leadership, you'd probably get as many different answers as you would questions. But I know that the thing that has qualified me in terms of my ability to lead is having served another's vision, having served under another man's authority, having learned how to hear and how to see, and walking with a man, which, by the way, is, I think, has equipped me in a way that I would have never been equipped to be able to hear and see on my own had I not experienced that with another. I don't believe a man legitimately has a right to be in a place of authority or leadership if he has not been processed through a lifestyle of learning how to walk and be under authority before he's placed in a position where he exercises it. I believe because of our fallenness, if we are not processed by that which we aspire to out of our fallenness, and despite our great intentions, out of our fallenness, we will exercise authority as the world does. Mm-hmm. And the Bible speaks clearly and specifically to that. And I believe the only thing that tempers that, the only thing that refines that, is the fire of God that comes through learning how to cross your own will relative to someone that God has called to lead. Right. Your own desire, your own opinion, your own perspective, even your own idea that you could do it better. To learn to take on responsibility that would come and indirection that would come from another. I thank God for that in my life. I thank God for the days and the hours, though they've not been many, when I had to just salute and come to attention. I remember one situation many, many years ago. We had taken on, Dennis had taken on the responsibility.
Right. It was my fault.
Of saying, we will coordinate Jesus 79. And we will, you know, we will pull off that event. I thought that's a wonderful idea, Dennis. Dennis is great at that. I mean, he's made, equipped, schooled, trained for that kind of thing. The next day he called me in his office and he said, and oh, by the way, I would like you to be over the event day and I would like you to be in charge of everything that's going to happen there.
By the way, parenthetically, this is a major mass rally at Candlestick Park.
Right.
With boku thousands of Christians that were pulled together.
I believe I was delighted and had faith that Dennis had taken on this responsibility. I knew it was an arena in which he would shine and he would do well. But when he called me in the next day and informed me that he would like me to take on the responsibility of carrying off all of the things that needed to be coordinated and brought together that day, now, I don't mind telling you, I felt on the verge of a breakdown. I mean, I wanted to look him in the face and say, you fool, you do not know what you're saying, nor what you're doing, and you will live to regret this. I didn't say
that. I was a fool, and I didn't know what I was picking up, but God blessed it.
But you know, I didn't say all those things. I just probably looked real stunned and walked out of the room and said, God, I know I can't do this. And I know I had not been asked if I'd like to do something. I know I've been told that I need to take up this responsibility. And so in faith, I will embrace the responsibility, believing that by God's appointed authority, working in my life, I will have the grace to fulfill the responsibility. Well, the next few months were exciting, scary, trying. I learned to administrate in a way that I had never believed I could administrate. And, you know, I'll let Dennis perhaps interpret how we pull the day off. But
it
seemed to go well.
Very well.
I came out of that experience saying one of the purposes of authority in our life is to take us where we wouldn't go if we didn't have it. And the confidence and the kind of security, and I think as a result, kind of authority you end up coming into. You come into not because you've taken on an assignment. You come into because confidence has been laid in you as you've learned to serve authority.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the scenes in a movie that had really impacted me was in the television miniseries on the Civil War. And it was the scene when General Lee and had his officers around and they were talking about that fateful day that they were going to make Pickett's charge, and his officers had shared with them their reservations. But once he said, okay, now get it done. I want you guys to go around. You've got this strategy, and he gave everybody their assignment. Though they didn't believe it would work or whatever, they saluted smartly and said, we'll get it done. And I actually broke in tears as I watched that because I was thinking how little like that understanding we have today in the church, or, you know, just in life, and how much I would aspire to be that way. Because I know I would tend to want to argue also, like, my opinion here is that government's right. But to be able to say, okay, if that's the final decision, if we all die, we all die, let's go do it. I think what Dick was saying, and I totally agree, you don't learn that kind of stuff unless you've been on that side where you've had to salute smartly and say, let's do it, and have no clue how you're going to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a bad place for those who think that that's an unjust place or a wrong place to be in. If that's where you are, then God's training you for leadership.
It's a real thrill when you get on the other side of it, too. I mean, when you start off knowing that you're having to salute without any sight of how you'll pull it off, the reward at the end is even greater and more fulfilling than you would have imagined.
I think of the biblical example of Elijah and Elisha, and I think it's a good model of what we're talking about. Elisha, who at the end of Elijah's life asked for a double portion. He had a place to ask for that because he had washed Elijah's hands for 20 years and really served his vision and served him in that way. As we're preparing to close this interview, I'd like to give each of you an opportunity to share whatever closing thoughts that you have on leadership or any personal remarks to those who are listening to this interview beyond what's already been spoken, or just summarizing what you feel has been most valuable in this time together.
Well, Adam, I think the thing that I would share is that leadership is a little like the tensile strength of steel or cement or whatever else. that the load-bearing capacity of a bridge or a road is based on the strength and the foundation that is underneath it. And leadership is a privilege, but leadership is a tremendous responsibility. And in some ways, I mean, from God's point of view, I know this is good, but unfortunately, from our point of view, the changes that need to occur in this fallen world and in the church are so great, and the opposition to that change so significant, that in order to be an agent of change in the areas that are going to really make a major difference, and I know Dudley or Dick can speak to this from a more personal point of view, as in family or whatever, because everybody's contribution is critical wherever it is. But this program is designed to provoke and promote and challenge men and women who would be willing to pay the price to withstand the kind of pressure to lead at the level that will fulcrum and bring significant change in a culture. And there's no easy way for that to take place. I love just sitting here around this table with my brothers, realizing the different prices that we've all paid. And yet in one way it's all the same. It's all the same price tag, just different theme, different variations on the same thing. To really bring about change, you've got to be willing to say yes to the Lord when you're quiet, when you're alone. Nobody will know. It really is in the dark, so to speak. A lot of people are heroes in front of other people. But to me, the real heroes are the ones that obey when there's nobody around and only you and Jesus know. And that, to me, is the road to real leadership. And I'd say in closing on that side that the things that you want to change are usually commensurate to the kind of pain and sacrifice that is involved in being able to change those things. So those of you that aspire to lead, and if you have big visions, you need to understand there's a big price tag on being able to carry that weight.
I'll just hit at the angle of everybody is a leader. And you don't have to wait to start leading. In fact, if you wait, you won't ever be leading. You start right where you are now. And if all you got to lead is yourself, as Dennis just said, then lead yourself. Now, self-government is the very first stage. But if you have friends, if you have anybody in the family, if you have any kind of responsibility to lead as a servant, to lead with some of these goals we've talked about today, realizing that none of us are the lamb on the throne. That's our goal. But not to put off being a leader, not thinking that one of these days somebody's going to wise up and recognize you're the smartest, greatest person on the earth and put you in leadership. The fact is, if you're not leading with integrity and some sense of responsibility now, you never will move upward. So start where you are.
Adam Paul said it's good to aspire to leadership. He was talking in particular about church leadership, eldership. He said it's good to aspire to be an elder. But I believe that Paul meant that in the context of aspiring to responsibility, not to authority. I'm always concerned when I touch the immatureness of a man who aspires to authority rather than to responsibility. And I want to say to all of you and all the men and women that listen to us today, if you genuinely believe that you're apprehended and called of God to be a leader, then you will come into that and you will know the fruitfulness of that as you aspire to responsibility. As you're responsible, there will be authority. But I trust no man who aspires to authority without being primarily motivated by responsibility.
Can I say one other thing? Just a word about failure. Failure doesn't always disqualify you. If it's responded properly to, it can be the fodder out of which your success comes. So, you know, Peter failed miserably in his first responsibility, but the Lord restored him, and later on he did a pretty good job. And so failure is not final if we respond to the mercy of God and keep going. In fact, a lot of authority that we get in our life comes from experience, and experience comes from failure. And so don't get into hopelessness. If you fail, a righteous man may fall 7 times, but the Lord will lift him up.
And my last comment, that's great, doesn't it? My last comment is, truth has got a price tag. When I was younger, because I loved truth, I got really excited about it till one day the Lord said, spin that baby over and see what that's going to cost. And there's a lot of people right now talking about destiny and vision. I'm sure there always have been. But the bigger your vision, the greater the cost to be a leader to get there. So aspire to have a big vision. Aspire for the Lord to give you big things that you see in vision and revelation. But if you're going to be a participant in bringing those things to pass, understand there really is a price tag. Christ's price was Calvary, and I suspect some other things that go along with all that. And just be aware that that is the price of vision.
I want to thank each of you for your time here. As representatives of the next generation, we want to thank you on behalf of the Strategic Life Training listeners here, not only for your time, but for the impartation that's been made, and even more importantly, for your obedience, commitment, and walk that has allowed you to sit at this table and give the incredible insight that you have. Thank you very much.
This is a copyrighted program of Go Strategic, Santa Rosa, California. Unauthorized reproduction is prohibited. Go Strategic is an international nonprofit organization that educates and equips leaders and others for effective service and leadership using biblical principles. For more information, visit us online at www.gostrategic.org.